Can't sell it anywhere else, man. It's right here in West Virginia.
This is the Community Podcast with Zach Beard and Aaron Marco, two Morgantown real estate agents highlighting the good people of our city and state. We're taking you behind the sign, connecting interesting people, places, and faces, why they do what they do, and how they came to be doing it. We're building a better community. You're a leftover guy, Aaron. You like to eat leftovers?
Yeah, I think you're losing out if you're not eating leftovers.
Yeah, I'm hit or miss. There's certain items I can eat, you know, some soups especially, lasagna.
How many things are better the next day? I mean, there's plenty of them. There's
soups,
a lot of
and chilies, in my opinion.
Yeah,
lasagna
is
okay. Meatballs.
Better the next day?
Better the next
better
day.
The
there's
next
a lot
day.
Of foods that are better the next oh, yeah. day.
Meatballs are better the next day.
Yeah,
I think.
Meatball.
Okay, so some things take on some flavor the next day. But majority of your dishes for me, you know, macaroni and cheese, spaghetti, even a lot of fish dishes or chicken dishes. To reheat it for me, I do not enjoy it.
I know some people are like that, man. They do not do leftovers.
Yeah, I'd rather throw it away and let it sit in the fridge for a week and then throw it away.
I think those people have too much money.
Most of my
I grew
leftovers
up poor.
Get most of my leftovers get consumed cold. And on the run.
Now that's where I was driving into, temperature and flavor.
Yeah.
So you consume a lot of yours cold?
Yes.
Interesting.
98% of the leftovers I consume cold.
And that's a product of being a very busy person.
That's a reaching your hand in there. What's the first thing you see?
That's it.
And can you eat it while you're walking away?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
That was where I was kind of segueing into. Do you think temperature affects flavor? You know, so many of us are adverse to eating leftovers cold. But is it based on growing up? What causes that, do you think?
I don't know. I've eaten a lot of cold leftovers in my life. I grew up in the restaurant business, and it was a time you ate when you could, and you ate what was available. You know, it wasn't
regardless of temperature.
That was it.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, we're sitting here at the restaurant. You're going to have a variety of things here served hot or cold.
I tell you what, I am beyond impressed with the location that we're at today. And, you know, I'm going to say this. You know, I'm actually pretty excited about this because the guest that we have with us today, I've been watching him work this out for almost 3 years now.
Well, that's all right. Well, tell us where we're at.
Yeah, we're coming to you today from Nano Carlos, brand new in the Suncrest Town Center, and it is owned by one of the best hometown heroes you're ever going to meet, Mr. Nick DeMedici.
Thank you, Aaron, very much. That's a lot of honor bestowed in the title, but
well, it is, and I say that in all sincerity, man. I really think you're one of the hometown heroes, and you've got such a great backstory. And I think everybody's going to love listening to your backstory today, and ultimately driving us all the way to this day, which is just about a week before you're actually going to open here.
And that's correct. That's correct.
We're mentioning
very excited.
Honor being bestowed in the title. You've done that very thing at this restaurant. It would seem.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yep.
As you're taking us through the history of this place, what we see on the wall, the decorations.
Then the history that's in this place right now, and I'm sure you'll get a chance to tell us a little bit about it. Nick, tell us a little bit about your backstory. How did you end up wanting to be in the restaurant business?
That's a very good question, Aaron.
How many people question your sanity going into this?
Many people have questioned my sanity at many different times in my life for various reasons, and this is one of them, certainly. So, you know, this is a lifelong dream. As you've mentioned, I've had many different ways of reinventing myself over the years, and I've been fortunate and blessed to do a lot of good things. This is one that has been on the roadmap for many years since childhood. You know, there was a place in Suncrest called Sammy's. It was a little Italian restaurant, and I remember...
I remember when it was there.
I remember my grandparents, my father's parents, both being Italian, and when we were little, we would hang out at Nanny and Papa's house. And I remember my dad bringing the good meats and cheeses, and he always got them at Sammy's. And I was like, well, that's, you know, so special that you can get this stuff there. And I remember my grandparents being so fond of it. And I thought, man, you know, as I got older... And Sammy's unfortunately closed, I think sometime in the early 2000s. And you know, I've always been proud of my Italian heritage. and being fortunate enough to have actually traveled to Italy several times now and reconnected with family, it's just a it's an experience. And to bring something like that to Morgantown to honor my grandparents and everything that they loved and the things that my family have loved over the years and the things that I've grown up with, to be able to concentrate that down and put our family name on it it's a great honor, and I'm fortunate to.
It is, and you grew up in an Italian family, and so was food a central part of that? I mean, this is an authentic Italian family, so I'm sure food was the central area that everything revolved around.
Sure, it was food and family, and you know, we always had you see the memes now of an Italian mother or grandmother says, "Let me get you something to eat," and it's a 10-foot table just packed full of food, right. And that's the way it was. You didn't leave anyone's house without eating, and the flavors that I grew up with, just that I thought were normal, that everybody eats this.
Yeah.
As you get older, you appreciate those things, and unfortunately, as family members pass and you don't have that stuff anymore, then you know you really miss it. And my grandparents, I remember vividly, spoke Italian in the house. And I didn't know that was not normal.
Yeah.
That, you know, that was the way it was. And now, you know, I'm 36 years old, and you realize that, man, that was something special. And it's those things that that you just assume everybody gets.
But not everybody realizes how important it is. And that's a unique thing about you. You actually realize what's important in life, and you're able to look back on that. And not only do you realize it, but you reach back and connect with it. And that's what you've done here. I can see that's what you've done here, because I know what kind of, you know, I've been lucky enough to kind of travel along with you as you've dreamt this up and saw this coming to fruition, and I've seen the work that you've done leading up to this. Nick, you grew up here in Morgantown. Is this where you're from?
Correct. Born and raised, first ward area of Morgantown, and currently reside in the South Park area, so yes.
Yeah, but you didn't grow up in a restaurant business. You ended up, tell me about what you started out doing, your first dreams, because you've actually reinvented yourself a couple of different times, as you said, and so tell me a little bit about the progress.
Sure, I have, and several of them have overlapped each other, so you know, born and raised here, and in middle school, I had the desire to become a police officer. That's what I wanted to do, and that's kind of the first time I can really remember thinking, wow, this is a possibility, I could actually do this and become a police officer. So as, you know, from the South Junior High days, it was, this is what I want to do with my life. I want to be a police officer. So I graduated Morgantown High School. I attended Fairmont State for a brief period, and while I was in Fairmont State, I began working part-time at the Sheriff's Office here, Montague County Sheriff's Office.
As a deputy? Or
I started part-time as a court bailiff. So I was going to school during the day, and then I would come in and work in the courthouse as a bailiff in the afternoon. So I did that for like 10 months, and they were testing for the position of deputy sheriff. So I was in school, and I knew that that's what I wanted to do. So at that point in time, I said, well, I'll just take the test and see what happens. Well, I took the test, and I tied with two other individuals, and the three of us were offered the job. So at that point, I had a decision to make. Do I continue with my education, or do I go ahead and enter a field in which I'm, you know, going to school for? So I took the position, and I started as a deputy sheriff at the age of 20 in 2005. So that was the start of a law enforcement career. I went to the academy, came back, did a couple years on patrol, and then I was fortunate enough to be selected to become a member of the detectives division with the sheriff's office, which was a role I was very proud of. I was able to do a lot of good things, you know, and help some people that really needed help. So did that for a couple years, and in 2013, I joined the West Virginia State Police.
Now, that's not an easy one to make.
So, you know, I had a lot of friends and family that at the sheriff's department that were very good to me, and I really enjoyed that job. The opportunity I had presented to me with the state police was they had started an accelerated class. So basically, they chose certified police officers throughout the state, and they guaranteed you that you wouldn't have to move unless you wanted to, which was something they had never done before. It was the first class of its kind.
Because a lot of times you actually do have to move when you
Correct.
Become a state trooper.
Correct. So it was a great opportunity that was put in front of me. And at that point in my life, you know, it was a very, very difficult decision to make. And I I said, well, this could be the best thing you ever do or the worst thing you ever do. You just, you know, but everything happens for a reason, like we spoke before. So I decided to take that position, and ultimately I went back to the academy with another great group of individuals who I shared that class with, and I was stationed in Preston County when I came out of the academy. So I worked in the Kingwood Detachment of the State Police. It was a you know, different policing than Morgantown, different area, great place to work. I worked there for about a year and a half, came back to Morgantown, the Mon County Detachment, for about another year and a half after that, and then ultimately decided to get out of law enforcement.
So this is a neat story, and I know Zach's kind of sitting along trying to listen in, because Nick and I have known each other for such a long time. I kind of know the backstory already, you know, so it's unique trail. So what did you leave policing for, Nick?
So I left policing for several reasons, and you know, I had, like I said, I was able to do a lot of good things. At that point in my life, the job, and I wouldn't admit this before now, I'll admit it now, my head was not in the game anymore, so to speak. It was just time to move on. I started a painting business, actually, my best friend and I were sitting in my house one night, and I said, man, I need a way to make a little extra cash. I was thinking, you know, I'm going to start a side business. Kind of always been adventurous in that realm. And I had totally remodeled two houses at this point in my life that were my own. So I had a pretty good knack for being handy. A lot of that was useful. So I'm thinking, okay, what can I do in that? That's totally away from law enforcement, because at that point in time, I wanted a break from that realm. I wanted to do something that was totally unrelated. There was overtime available. I could have worked overtime if I wanted, but I was ready to do something else. And I've always enjoyed working with my hands. So my best friend was working for a construction company at that point in time. He said, we can never find painters. And I said, well, I can paint.
Yeah.
So I went to Lowe's with $200, and I bought some painting supplies, and I got a contractor's license, I got insurance, and I started Morgantown Paint Company, which turned out to be a very successful venture. So basically I would work 5 days a week with the state police. My days off at that point in time were Tuesday and Wednesday. So I would paint houses on Tuesday and Wednesday. It kind of took off, had more work than I can handle. So I did that while I was still a trooper for probably 8 months. It got to the point where I was thinking, you know, this could sustain itself. This is a sustainable business. So I started, you know, having those thoughts, like maybe it's time to make this move. And, you know, it's a scary thing going out on your own, as you know, especially from the only other thing that I had ever done prior to law enforcement was I cut grass at Milan Park. That was the first job I had when it was just baseball fields. So I really had a limited skill set. I said, well, let's do this. It was the right time to get out. For me, I was a much happier person. And that's not a job that you want to do if you can't enjoy what you're doing. You have to dedicate yourself 100%. And I was honest with myself, and it was time to go. So I transitioned. I left the state police to start a painting company, and people looked at me like I was crazy for the second time in my life. The first time is when I said I wanted to be a police officer. That was, people were like, oh, are you sure? You know, I remember there was my parents, for obvious reasons, didn't want me to do it.
Yeah.
But they were very proud eventually of everything I was able to do in my career. And but, you know, being a father now, I can't say that I wouldn't say the same thing if my son ever chose that career.
Well, I'm glad you're out of it now.
Yeah.
So tracking back, so you leave a salary position, start something brand new. Yeah. What year was that?
That was 2016, approximately. I'm trying to get my timeline together. That was about 2016. And that's what I did, and I found out very quickly that was the right move. For many reasons. I was a much happier person. I was my own boss. I was able to, you know, control my destiny, I guess you could say.
No doubt. Did you bring on employees?
I did not bring on employees. I was a one-man show. I did have some other folks who would help from time to time if I had some big jobs. but I never made that jump to try and grow. You know, frankly, it was a good business just to be a owner operator.
Sure. Yeah. Was it commercial and residential, or?
Very, very little commercial.
Okay.
Most of it, 98% of the work I did was interior residential repaints. It was painting occupied homes. So a lot of the commercial, or a lot of the painting organizations out there, the bigger companies, they don't like to do that. And there's reasons. It's inconvenient. You know, you're moving furniture, you're painting in houses where there's carpet, and there's, you know,
value. A lot of room for mistakes.
A lot of room for error. So, taking time, paying attention to detail were things that I had, you know, developed in my law enforcement career, attention to detail, and being very detail-oriented and making sure that at the end of the day that was a good job. So
those attention to details, they'll set you up for success, though.
Yes.
I think we see a lot of that right here where we're sitting.
Yes.
So attention to details.
Thank you.
You definitely see the attention to detail here.
So I did that. That was a good movement. It was kind of the springboard for my own business mind. It turned in from, you know, you see Shark Tank and you see the how I built this and you think, okay, well that's, you know, that's attainable. I can do that too.
Yeah.
And that painting company really was a springboard for a lot of creative thought, a lot of ambition, I guess. It was kind of a breath of fresh air in my life at that point in time. And you know, I was engaged to my wife at the time, and it was, you know, it was turning a major page, and now that feels like a lifetime ago. But it was definitely a breath of fresh air.
You know, Nick, you look at the culmination here of your labors for some time, and a lot of people will walk in here and say, hey man, this guy did this, but they won't see all the time that you put in before this. I know your background a little bit. I know the early mornings and the late nights that you put in with everything that you do, and it's all that stuff that you don't see, much like in a restaurant itself. You know, you come in and you eat the food, but you don't really see all the work that goes into it in the back, from just ordering it to inventorying it to rotating it to cooking it to making sure everything's right. Ultimately, you just see it come to your table.
Sure.
And so I see the work that you've put in the background, and this place looks absolutely great. It's going to be phenomenal down here. Tell us a little bit about the place now that you – so we've made it through your law enforcement career, and we kind of skipped the active threat solution a little bit at this point in time. So let's transition through that a little bit, because that's ultimately, I think, what allowed you to get to this point.
Sure. You know, growing in business, and I had the painting company. At that point in time, there was a concept – underway in Morgantown called Defense in Depth, which is in Saberton. That's indoor retail shooting range. I had some background in those areas. When I was at the sheriff's office, I was on a special response team. So it was a section of my former career that I had experience in, and ultimately was able to get on with those folks. That was Doug Leach and Mark Nesselrode. They were the owners of that. And I started for them while I had the painting business. So ultimately, I chose to pursue the Defense in Depth route. And I hung up the painting whites, so to speak. And I worked for Defense in Depth. Got that off the ground with a good team of folks there. And then ultimately transitioned into a security consulting role for them. Which has since been rebranded as Safer Site. So, and which I am still in that role. I work with a team of law enforcement officers and you know, protective services individuals in about 4 states now, and we specialize in creating safer spaces through design, technology, and education. So, looking at everything from a neighborhood HOA, you know, whether you need gating, what are the risk factors for residential burglaries. You know, private education is a sector we work in quite often, as well as churches. So really essentially doing that, taking a space, looking at it and in its whole, as far as everything from physical security to the policies and procedures that are in place at that organization, and utilizing our team of subject matter experts to
create a safer space for those folks. So that's currently my day job. And Nono Carlo is...
Like this wasn't enough.
Yeah, sometimes I get rather... I get too ambitious, I've been told. So that's what I do during my daytime. And in the other daytime, I've been busy spearheading this Nono Carlo project with my business partner, Braun Kyle.
And that's exactly what we're here for. So let's talk about Nono Carlo at this point in time. First of all, what is Nono Carlo?
Sure. Nono Carlo is Italian for Grandpa Carl. That is my grandfather, Carl Carlo de' Medici, was my grandfather, and he and I were very, very close, and it's an honor to name this place for him in many, many ways. So, yes.
Yeah, and I tell you, you've done such a great job, you know, really, and I'll use the word importing all of your family traditions and all this stuff into this place, you know, the pre-interview walkthrough that we did through here and just pointing out all the really neat things you were able to kind of curate over your time
Sure. That
would belong to your family and everything, and you've actually, you know, wrapped them into this place, which gives it a really great home feeling. And that Italian family home feeling is right here. So what are you going to be doing in this location here? What is the crux of this?
So in this space, we will have essentially two different lines. So we have our prepared food products, which we have a brick oven from Italy, a Marforna oven. We're going to be doing wood-fired Napolitan-style pizzas. So it's a pizza that, frankly, you can't get anywhere around here. There's a couple places in Pittsburgh that have this style of pizza. It's the traditional Neapolitan-style pizza from Naples, Italy. It's made under very specific guidelines. So, you know, a very specific flour, a very specific oven. The preparation is detailed in a way that differs from your standard, you know, your New York style or your Chicago style. This is another style that is specific to one little piece of the world in Naples, Italy.
What makes it so different?
I mean,
obviously you said the temperature, the oven, sure. The pizza, the flour. Well, I guess the flavor profile, what makes it so different than?
The flavor profile is, I like to describe it as a very fresh taste. So in the standard margherita pizza, which would be your basil, your fresh mozzarella, and tomato with a little bit of olive oil. So you have a lot of like summer flavors. You have that tomato. We have a very specific sauce, imported tomatoes from Italy that create this sauce. So we're using Italian tomatoes, Italian flour, and it's almost like a summer freshness in
okay.
the pizza. So, you know, you have, if you grew up in a family that had a garden or was able to harvest those summer vegetables, that tomato in the summer always tastes like a tomato in the summer.
Oh, yeah.
And that basil is so fresh. So when you combine those ingredients with a very good airy crust, cooked under wood, it's an experience in itself.
It really is. I mean, pizza margherita is my absolute, absolute favorite pizza.
Yeah. So, you know, that's the shining star of the pizza that we have here. We'll have a couple other pizzas available. You know, we're going to do a white bianca, we'll do a funghi, a mushroom. So we have a portabella that we're using on the pizza. But all the preparation style is the same. We're all honoring those, the Napolitan style. And bringing that to Morgantown is something that I'm very proud of. So that's the pizza side. We will have sandwiches and some appetizers as well. So again, staying... you know, we are from the Abruzzi region of Italy. That's where we came from. So the southern Italy, there's a lot of Calabrese Italians in our area as well. You know, everyone came here for the coal and the timber industry at the turn of the century, as my family did. And so preserving that culture, as I said, been fortunate enough to travel to Italy several times. It's a life-changing experience. Anyone who has not been, I recommend you go because it will change your life. So to bring those flavors and that aesthetic, I mean, the tile on the wall here, the tile scheme is designed after a butcher shop I was actually in over there. So taking all those little pieces and bringing that authentic Italian experience to Morgantown is...
Well, tell us a little bit about the due diligence that you put in coming to this. I know your attention to detail. I know your quest for authenticity. Tell me a little bit about how you actually started putting this together and some of the steps that you took to actually bring this level of authenticity.
Sure. So let's just go to the beginning. This concept was something that I've been thinking about, as we said earlier, for a lifetime. But it was always those
true Italian products. Those things that, like, once you figured out, no one else eats, you know, prosciutto on a piece of bread with olive oil on it at 11 o'clock in the morning at the grandparents' table. You know, it's just, you know, once you figure that out and that not everybody does that, you want to share that with everybody. Because it's a special feeling in my life to be able to have experienced that. So, you know, as we said, food and family, that's it.
Yep.
So bringing that to the table and saying, all right, let's get some of these flavors that people don't normally experience here. Let's bring that familial aspect. Let's make this place an experience and allow everyone to share that feeling that I had and that I was so fond of, I am so fond of when I was a child. So about almost 4 years ago now, I'm a Rotarian, so here in my local Rotary Club, I met my business partner, Braun Kyle, of Harma Hospitality. So Braun was an experienced restaurateur, and I pitched him the idea. And coincidentally, he had always, he loves Italian food, so yeah. He'd always wanted to do a concept. And we started, really it started off as a pepperoni roll cart. We were going to do pepperoni rolls and, you know, open them up like everybody does, put more sauce in them, yep. Peppers. That's how it started. And then it kind of went from everything from a fine dining to a food truck to a super small pepperoni roll only place. It's been all over for the last almost 4 years now. But we came the last year, really, we have laid this place out detail by detail and keeping that true, authentic Italian experience. Like what I want you, if you go to Italy, I want you to feel like that's what it walks when you walk through our doors. So all of the products have been sourced. You will not find a product on our retail shelf that does not come from Italy 100%. So you go to the store, if you look at your olive oils at any of your grocery stores, you're going to see 90% of those olive oils will source olives from 5 or 6 different countries. On our shelves, those olives only come from Italy.
So you're not finding these anywhere else in Morgantown, maybe not even in Pittsburgh.
Correct. Everything on our retail shelves, we have a great source that are direct importers. So we are very fortunate to have products that you will not find even in Pittsburgh. 90% of the products on our retail shelves you will not find in Pittsburgh. You will not find them in the Strip. I'm very, very proud of that. And we're talking as authentic as it gets. It is amazing products. Those shelves, there's a lot of work and a lot of tasting, which I didn't mind in those shelves. But we're very fortunate to be able to have these lines that we have. And again, to bring this experience to Morgantown, you know, when you walk into a butcher shop or a sandwich shop or a market in Italy, these are the flavors you're going to see. And that is hugely important to us, maintaining that authentic experience. So
you're a fast food or a fast service food restaurant here. So you're going to be doing that. And you also obviously have the market end of this covered too. So you can come in and you'll be able to get obviously this stuff on this on the shelves. But you got a deli case back there. You can get cheeses. Can you get the deli meats and
correct.
Stuff?
Correct. So we have the retail space up front. When you walk in, you'll see the retail shelving on the right. We have some coolers on the left where we'll have olives and, you know, some grab and go type items. We're going to have San Pellegrino water. You know, all the Italian flavors, grab-and-go olives. We also have canned items as well, jarred items. And then we do have our deli case. So you will be able to buy meats and cheeses by the pound here, just like you would in a traditional deli. And then we also have the quick service aspect of our prepared foods. So the pizza Napolitans, we have house-made chips with some Italian flavors. And then we will have some appetizer dishes as well. Some de' Medici family meatballs. We're using our own sauce and meatball recipe.
So you're doing those on a sub or just so on the side?
We have those on a sub, and then we're also serving them in a bowl over house-made ricotta cheese. So
that sounds amazing.
Our team here makes
house-made
ricotta cheese. We're also going to be stretching mozzarella in-house in small batches, so it's going to be you know, at noon or whatever the designated time may be, the fresh mozzarella goes out, we have it until it's gone. So that is a super fresh product. That is
to get the experience, again, keeping with the experience, it's got to be consumed within a couple hours.
So you're actually hand-stretching the mozzarella here in-house?
Correct, from curds. From cheese curds, you take the curds. It's a yep. process. You heat them up slowly, gradually bring them to heat. And then it almost looks like if you've been to like Ocean City or where they stretch saltwater taffy.
Yeah,
that's what it looks like. It looks like a big ball of bubble gum. So you just pull it out till all those curds cook, and then you ball it up into a saltwater brine. So, again, something that is not being done in Morgantown, an experience.
Is that a demonstration people can even come and watch?
So that's on our roadmap. We're probably going to have like a cheese making class where we actually show you how to stretch the curds. We're working on some other things like that where we can, again, you know, maintain that experience and say, okay, if you want to make fresh curds, this is how you do it. If you want to stretch fresh mozzarella, this is how you want to do it. There's going to be a lot of that here, again, keeping with the experience. This is more than a restaurant. You know, I'm hoping to organize some motor games here, which is kind of an Italian hand game that you'll see people play in groups. You know, bringing those things that maybe I experienced as a child that other folks didn't, that are really neat. An experience. When you walk in here, you're going to get an experience. More than just the food, more than just the retail space, you are going to feel like you are somewhere else.
Great. Greater than the sum of its parts.
Correct.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
One of the things I saw back there in a deli case, one of my absolute favorites was porchetta.
Porchetta.
Yeah, it's actually going to be here. So, yeah, there's a couple of pronunciations. I said porchetta, all right, and you said porchetta.
Porchetta.
Yeah, all right.
So porchetta, again, that's something we haven't found in Morgantown, but actually when I was in Italy on one of my trips, in the region of
Morgantown,
they're
familiar
there
with
that
area.
A town called Sulmona, and I know there's some at the Sulmona Market, which is the second largest open air market in Italy outside of Rome. There's vendors set up all around this town square, and it's, you know, similar to our farmers market here. Probably compared to the Morgantown farmers market, I would say it's three times the size, and it's everything from your salumerias are there with all the salamis and soppressatas, all your preserved cured meats. Then there's, you know, farmers with eggs, farmers with vegetables, fresh figs. I mean, it's an experience in itself. But one of the things that they had there was a porchetta sandwich. So a porchetta is a traditional Abruzzese dish from the region of Abruzzi. And essentially, it is a half of pork. So it's a pork belly with a tenderloin attached, deboned. And then on the inside, it's smeared with all kind of wonderful regional herbs. So fennel, sage, it is rolled up and then roasted, and then sliced and put on a sandwich. So you get roasted pork tenderloin with that rib meat, with those fennel and sage flavors, and then you get a little bit of the pork skin, the crackling, as we would know it here, on that bun, and it creates a flavor, again, like no other. So
it is absolutely incredible.
It sounds amazing.
It is absolutely, you know, years ago when you got back from that first, one of those trips to Italy, and we were talking, and you know, I watched a couple of the videos you told me about this market, and I saw them making it, and so I said, I'm going to make that. and so I did. I made a couple of them. It's just, I don't know what kind of justice I did to it, but it was phenomenal. Yeah. It's hard to mess up pork bellies. You know, pork bellies are good just about whatever way you make them, but what a great, great dish.
Let me ask this, too. So a lot of us, when we go to a restaurant, there's those five items that we're familiar with. That's what we pick from. Mm-hmm. So when someone new comes in here, sees porchetta, and you look at it in that – the freezer or fridge there,
yeah.
You have no idea what it is. How are you going to get them to try that?
So that with the porchetta will be on a hot carving station, so it will be you'll see it getting sliced.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm sure a lot of people are going to go, well, what's this? You know, tell me about this. A big part that we need to be on our game about here is educating our customer, because in gaining that experience and sharing that experience, we have to, you know, a lot of the products on the shelves are written in Italian.
Mm-hmm.
So what may be, you know, just a jar of olives, it may have something totally different. So making sure we have the appropriate training for our staff, we have the appropriate signage that illustrates actually what these things are. Because there are some stuff in here. I mean, there's tuna and anchovy stuffed peppers in a jar. I'm pretty confident saying that's probably only been seen a couple times, if ever, in Morgantown. So, you know, at the outside, it just looks like a jar of peppers.
Yeah.
But if you buy that thing and it's a jar of peppers and you bite into a
with anchovies
tuna and anchovy stuffed pepper, you're either going to be very happy or very upset. So,
oh, it sounds so fantastic. You know, the neat thing that you're going to have here is Morgantown's very eclectic already. There's a lot of people that are very have experienced palates, let's say. Yes, you'll definitely have to educate a lot of people because even those people still won't know what some of this stuff is. But at least it's not such an uphill battle as you would have in maybe many other parts of the states that just aren't experienced or haven't had the opportunity to experience such things yet.
And it's my pleasure to introduce these products.
I know it is.
I mean, if this was something that, you know, 10-year-old, 15-year-old, 18-year-old, man, I'd have been all over this place. and that's just, you know, because I want that experience. I want those flavors. I want the things that are kind of, they're not the norm. But they're not the norm in our little piece of the world. In another piece of the world, they are the norm. And you know, it's all about the experience.
Well, I think one of the things, and Zach, I'm sure you'll attest to this too, is that a lot of these foods in their home country would be considered mostly peasant food. This is not, you know, we go out to these places and think of them as high-end kind of things, but really in their real, in the wild, let's say, they're actually more like peasant food.
The origin of a lot of these foods is that. I mean, you know, and one thing that I learned in Italy that is different from the concept here is when you're traveling on the roads in Italy, even on the interstate system, you don't see trucks. You don't see tractor trailers taking food from one end of the country to the other. Everything there is regionalized. So the cuisine that you're going to get in the Abruzzi or the Calabria section of Italy is very different from what you're going to experience near Milan or Rome even. The Romans have their own menu. They have specific dishes. Southern Italy has very specific dishes. When you get into the coastlines, you get into like the Positano or Amalfi, very seafood heavy. When you get to where we're from, it's very mountainous. It looks similar to West Virginia. You have a lot of produce. You have a lot of wild boar. You have a lot of venison, truffles. Black truffles here are very rare.
Oh yeah.
I mean, to get a black truffle here, you're gonna pay a decent amount of money. Yeah. There the dogs dig them up underground. It's
right,
and they're on everything because they use their products regionally. They do it. They source stuff throughout the country, but the cuisine, the staple dishes, have stayed the same because that's what the land produces. And my experience growing up in an Italian American household was that you do anything you do with what you have, whether that's eat, you eat what you have. So if you only have three ingredients, you have to figure out a way to make it taste good.
Yep.
If you, we were joking about this sign here that my grandfather fixed. If all you have is a piece of scrap metal to hold a sign together, that's what you're going to use. You take what you have in front of you and you make it what it is. And that is, you look at a lot of the pepperoni roll, perfect example. You had hot salami, you had hot salami, pepperoni, and you had bread. You're taking them both. Now let's put it together. So that's a perfect example of what most of those Italians did. You take what you have and you incorporate that into your dishes. I mean, I remember being little, my grandfather, he would take sausage and potatoes and onions and peppers. It was his garden with some sausage in a pan, in a cast iron skillet, and you'd fry it up. And it was amazing. Garlic, I mean, it was amazing. So you see those traditions that were brought here with the immigrant culture, and that's what they did over there. Translation, they came over here. That's what they did here.
That's what stuck. Yeah,
that's what stuck. It's grew up. So you see a lot of those influences in the Italian American foods. You see a lot of those things where it's making what you have with what you have.
Well, there's a lot of identity wrapped up in each one of these things, and you talk about these regional places that throughout Italy, and I know they protect that to some degree. They protect that authenticity in each one of these regions. It's not that they're incapable of doing the stuff from other regions, but they have their thing and they stick to it.
Correct. It's it's one of the coolest things. You can spend 5 days in Italy and go to five different regions, and you're going to have five different flavors. Yeah. Oftentimes, you,
something that we kind of forget here, because I can get the exact same food in Florida that I can get in Washington State.
And it's exactly the same. In many cases, it truly is exactly the same. You know, it's made in a big factory somewhere, and they sell boxes of it all over the whole country.
Yeah.
You know, so.
So those regional flavors, those, and when you're talking regional foods, you're talking freshness as well. So
yeah, that's right.
If you're in the Amalfi Coast area and you're eating seafood, that seafood's
right.
Didn't go through a factory.
Yeah.
It came from a boat to a restaurant.
Like within 24 hours.
Yes.
Yeah. So is there a particular region that you are kind of exemplifying here? Or is there?
So the region, obviously, we're Abruzzese. So the southern side of Italy. You know, we're about an hour and 20 south of Rome via car. So this area is very heavily populated with Abruzzese Italians and Calabrese Italians. Those were the two main areas who came here at the turn of the century to work in the coal industry. So you will see a very heavy influence in our flavors from those regions. Some of our products on the shelves are specific to those regions. We have Calabrian chili peppers. There's a Calabrian chili pepper spread that's going to be on one of our sandwiches. So,
speaking of peppers, can you smell that, Zach?
Oh, it smells amazing.
I mean, what
my stomach's been growling this entire time.
That's roasted peppers. I can smell peppers roasting right now. I mean, it just came across, but I'm telling you, I can smell peppers roasting right now.
A little sweetness in there, and
it is
amazing.
I know what roasted peppers smell like. And it is. I hope we're getting lunch here after this.
the flavors of southern Italy is primarily. Well, that's the northern stuff here. I mean, our products are sourced from 10 different regions, primarily our retail products. And they're mostly artisanal. So you're talking 7-8 generation family farms that are sourcing these. One of our tomato producers actually traveled here. He was from Salerno. So he came here and, you know, told the story of his family's farm, and he was a younger guy. He was in his late 20s, early 30s, but he was many, many generations of the same family have been producing these tomatoes for years. So those stories, each jar on our shelf, each item on our shelf, there's a story with it. And that's something I'm very proud of.
Yeah, I look forward to this opening up. And you can find anything here from like a 20-year olive oil to your house.
Sure. So we have many, many different flavors. So we have in Italian cuisine, the extra virgin olive oil, the first cold press is, you know, it's just like a fine wine. There's a very specific set of criteria. There's a very specific way that it's produced to be a true extra virgin first cold press. And when you taste that flavor, there is no there's no denying what that is.
Oh, and there's nothing like it.
It's a very, very specific flavor. So we have the top shelf oils, as I would say, which would be, you know, I compare it to wine. You have your very, very high-end wines, and then you have your table wine. So most of our things are going to be on that better, best range. We have, being that they're 100% imported, 100% Italian, we have those top-of-the-line oils and vinegars here on our.
And that's one a lot of people won't know. The listeners won't know a lot about is that there is an age designation to these balsamic vinegars.
Right.
And I mean, if you haven't had like good balsamic vinegar before, you're really in for a treat. What's some of the balsamic vinegars you're carrying here?
So we have currently on our shelf, we have a white vinegar. We have a 5-year balsamic aged 5 years, and then we have an 8-year balsamic. We are waiting on a 20-year. You know, being that it's a 20-year vinegar, it's
not easy to get.
It's not easy to get, but it should be on its way. We're waiting on something to come through from one of our importers. But if we could get a 20-year vinegar, that's really something special. I mean, a 20-year-old balsamic vinegar, that's a special occasion vinegar. That's a Christmas Eve, family around. We're going to break that vinegar out the same with some of these high-end olive oils. You know, you're talking, this is a special occasion.
And what are you doing with that? Are you dipping bread in it? What's cheese?
Yeah, you're dipping bread. You know, the balsamics are good. They're dressing. So you want to dress like a bruschetta, like a bruschetta, as we would say, with these high-end oils and vinegars, because they amplify the flavor. And you'll taste, if you take a lower-grade extra virgin olive oil, or maybe even a second press, and you compare it with some of the oils that we have here, it's night and day. It is night and day. And
And once you experience that, you don't forget that taste. It's something special.
It is. And I see some of these flavored olive oils, these infused olive oils over there as well. What are you using those for? You mentioned the term finishing oils earlier.
Sure. So, finishing as a, I don't want to say a topping because that doesn't do it justice, but it's a finishing aspect. So a finishing flavor. So, we have the Anfoso lemon olive oil. So that's a first press, cold press, extra virgin olive oil with a hint of lemon. So on top of a salad, a drizzle on top of a salad. We have a truffle as well. So a truffle on top of, a crostini or a piece of bread. You're adding flavor on top of flavor. It's remarkable flavoring.
Well, it sounds to me if you have any Italians or people that love Italian food in your life, this is going to be a great place to pick up something for them for special occasions and for gifts and so forth.
Correct. Again, the things that you will not find even in the Strip District of Pittsburgh, that's huge. Growing up, we'd go to the Strip. You go to the Strip. Everybody says, we go to the Strip to get this, and we go to the Strip to get that, and the Strip's great. To be able to offer something additional to that, to where we can become the destination. Hey, I'm going to go to Nonno Carlo.
Yeah.
I mean, that's amazing. Sometimes I still have to shake myself and go, this is really happening.
This is real.
This is real.
Nick, I know your enthusiasm. I know the level of dedication you put into things, and I think this is going to be just a terrific location. I'm looking personally to frequenting it much myself.
Yes,
I see the stuff that's taking place here, man, and I can't tell you how happy I am for you and how impressed I am with the place here, man. I think it's going to be one of those impressive places in Morgantown that's going to be here for many, many years to come.
Thank you very much.
Yep. As we wrap up, you have a date you're looking to aim to open up?
So we're looking to soft open here in the coming weeks. Probably have a grand opening further down the road once we're up and everything's established and
working,
we make sure our processes are where we need to be. So. We don't want to rush into anything. Obviously, we've taken our time to get to this point. To rush an opening would be foolish. So we are going to make sure that everyone is trained. We're going to make sure that everything is functioning the way it needs to be. And then we'll unlock the doors and see what happens. So
get ready, man. Get ready because they're going to be lining up out here. There's no doubt about that.
We want to make sure we're ready for that line.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So coming soon. Probably, I don't know what the release date of this will be, but in the very, very near future.
All right. Well, that's super. Zach, you got anything else for Nick today?
Not at all. No, I'm looking forward to this opening up, and I appreciate taking time to be on the community podcast with us.
I really love the fact that you came on here. I've been looking forward to this for a long time. I knew it was coming. I've been anticipating it for a long time, and I really, really enjoyed the opportunity to sit down and talk with you again. And I'm, like I said before, I'm really happy for you getting ready to open this place up, man. I can't wait to jump in here. Now I hope we're going to get a little something to eat while we're here.
Well, gentlemen, it's been my pleasure, and thank you very much. This was a lot of fun. Thank you.
All right. Awesome. Excellent.